The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Sorry, I cracked myself up. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. So many things to talk about today. So much activity going on. So let's talk about, there's quite a list of things that we want to try and get through today.
Absolutely, indeed. So let's just get started. The first thing that I wanted to ask you about is that the government has proposed to an overhaul to the provision of the kashrut services in Israel. Well, I hope this is not too little too late. What is the proposal for the new system?
So this is one of the platforms that the current government presented, saying that this is, was the plan when the government was originally put together. And they have very, very quickly already initiated legislation to effectively take away the control of the undertaking of the kashrut services from the chief rabbinate. So instead of the chief rabbinate operating the supervisors and operating the entire group of people, all the supervisors who are out there policing kashrut services, in the future the chief rabbinate will be overseeing a number of different companies who will be granted licenses to carry out kashrut supervision services in industry and, of course, restaurants around Israel. And what this is attempting to do is really, first of all, to try to create some level of competition for the kashrut supervision services, also thereby trying to increase the standard of the service provided, and also hopefully reducing the cost to the consumer, because the cost of this is very, very noticeable in the price that we pay for food that we buy, for food that we consume at restaurants, because those owners are being required to pay extraordinary amounts to their supervisors in order to maintain kashrut licenses. So there have been accusations in recent years of corruption, of poor standards, of high prices, lack of competition. The idea is going to be that the chief rabbinate will oversee all of that. They will grant licenses to various operators. And there is also a way out, which means that anybody who wants to operate a kashrut service which is not under the auspices of the chief rabbinate will also be able to do so by getting the approval of three municipal chief rabbis, or people who are at the level of a municipal chief rabbi. If they manage to get three of those people to authorize it, then potentially a kashrut operation service could be set up without the need for the chief rabbinate to be overseeing that. And so this is really going to create a much different environment for kashrut supervision services. The chief rabbinate, of course, opposing it. It would take away quite a lot of their power, but it seems as if though the current government is very much determined to push ahead with this. I think it's going to take probably 6 to 12 months for the legislation to be pushed through the Knesset, but at least the initial introduction has already been made, and for many people this is a very, very positive development.
Absolutely it is. The decision by Ben and Jerry's not to sell the ice cream in the occupied Palestinian territories, in inverted commas, continues to gather significant international attention. Is this turning out to be positive in terms of exposure, marketing, or negative?
Well, I think we can all decide together, right? I'm not going to draw a conclusion, and I suppose it's only the Ben and Jerry's bank manager who really know whether this has been good or bad for them. But certainly in the social media, in the public arena, it seems to be negative in my view. I mean, when you've got the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, coming out and saying he's not going to be eating his favorite gin and Ben and Jerry's flavor, then that doesn't kind of look good. There's just been so much going on. A lot of people in Israel angry with the decision. Lots of social media clips of store owners throwing out their stock of Ben and Jerry's, literally going to the freezer, taking the ice cream out of the freezer and throwing it in the nearest bin, saying, we're not going to be selling that stuff here anymore. So really lots and lots of outfall on an international scale. And I'm not quite sure if you guys have had the opportunity to see some of those things, but from what I can gather at the moment, it's not looking that positive for them. I just hope on their behalf that, you know, the people who really care about their social activities and who have cared about their social activities in the past will buy enough extra Ben and Jerry's to make up for the people who've been annoyed by this decision. Mm.
I always wonder about this because my concern is that I follow, when I look at my own social media feeds, I follow people that cover the issues that I want them to cover and very often share my views. So when I look at it, when I looked at social media yesterday, it was mostly negative about Ben and Jerry's, but it doesn't mean, you know, that I worry that that's the echo chamber that I've created for myself.
Right.
So it will be interesting to see beyond that.
Yeah. I mean, it's very good that you're aware of this, Howard, because social media, of course, does that. Mm. They try to connect you with people who have similar views to yours so that you feel like, you know, you have a good support group within your social media environment, particularly certain platforms whose names I will not mention publicly. But that's a well-known phenomenon, and people should generally be aware of that.
Mm-hmm. I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 0618951019. Do you think ultimately this is going to be good or bad for Ben and Jerry's? I also worry that there are more anti-Semites in the world than there are Jews. But that said,
maybe that's what they're building on.
Maybe. That's why I'd like your thoughts. 34519 or 0618951019. King Abdullah of Jordan is currently in Washington for meetings with President Biden and other officials from the U.S. administration. What's the purpose of the visit?
Well, it's interesting that King Abdullah is the first Middle East leader to get the ear of the U.S. president since he's been elected to office. President Joe Biden has not met with any other Middle Eastern leader up until now. King Abdullah being the first. Obviously, we know that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett will be due in Washington sometime over the next few weeks for his opportunity to meet. No other leaders across the Arab world have yet to be invited to Washington. So King Abdullah has that unique position. He's obviously seeking to try to strengthen his own position within Jordan. He had that scare, let's call it a scare of some sort, when his own brother, his half-brother, potentially rose up and threatened his authority on the throne as King of Jordan. That issue has now been put to bed, and the brothers have somehow reconciled to a position where they're both comfortable to continue, but that certainly weakened his position in Jordan. He's seeking to try to strengthen his position on the international stage by making sure that he, as the head of the Waqf religious council that rules over holy sites in Jerusalem, will also be reinforced. President Biden has made some very, very positive statements. They've also discussed apparently the two-state solution for the Palestinians. I think King Abdullah is very concerned that in some versions of peace agreements that Jordan effectively becomes the homeland for the Palestinians. That is at least one version that we've seen floating around. And of course, he's very eager to ensure that that is not the version that's ultimately adopted. He would not wish to see Jordan turning into a Palestinian homeland, not all of Jordan and not even some of Jordan. So he has very much in his interest to ensure that the Judea-Samaria areas, which have currently been allocated to the Palestinian Authority, continue to be on the agenda as part of a potential future Palestinian homeland. And of course, he very much needs President Biden's financial support. Jordan having a very tough economic time, a country without many natural resources, without a great deal of economy, and the king needs somehow to sustain himself, and he does so with the aid of the U.S. administration, amongst others.
It'll be fascinating to see how this develops. Corona update. Today's the first day of the operation of the Happy Badge for events and functions. What is that?
So the government decided to introduce this new way of conducting functions and events according to rules. And the rules that apply come under the name of the Tav Sameach, under the happy badge, the government trying obviously to present it as a positive thing. And the guidelines will mean that the number of attendees will not be limited at these events, but people will be required to wear masks. Only people who have been vaccinated or who have recovered or who have received a negative test within the last 24 hours will be allowed to attend these events. So it's really limited to those people who as far as the authorities are concerned, seem to think are a low risk that will be able to attend these events, and people will be required to wear masks except for when they are eating or drinking. There are events that take place outdoors where no restrictions on the number of people are allowed, but events that take place indoors, there will be some restrictions on the numbers. But this is really all designed to try and allow people to have events, to have functions, weddings, bar mitzvahs, whatever, to have their parties to move ahead without limitations. Interestingly enough, one of the other recommendations which I heard today was the fact that the government and the medical health organizations are considering the possibility of imposing a charge on coronavirus tests for people who have not been vaccinated. So this is just another push to try and get people to be vaccinated as much as possible, to try and encourage people. This is a stick rather than a carrot, I suppose, because those people who feel that they want to be tested and haven't been vaccinated may well have to pay for their tests going forward.
I think Israel's incredible in that they're just trying to find different ways to manage the situation, and some of it are obviously will be the right thing to do and will show to have been the right thing, and some might not. The parachute jumper to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the birth of Chana Senesh took place yesterday over Slovenia. How many Israeli jumpers were involved?
Well, it was the 100th anniversary of her birth, and there were 100 Israeli jumpers over Slovenia, joining in with jumpers from other countries. It was held, it included Hungarian, Slovenian, Croatian, and British jumpers. The event included two jumps, and these Israeli participants, many of whom are senior members of the IDF, parachuted from various lengths, various heights. One group of eight Israeli paratroopers jumped from 12,000 feet, along with some of the European counterparts. And then there was the 100 delegation jump. Those people jumped from a height of only 1,000 feet, and amongst them were some very, very senior officers indeed from the IDF. So this is really all about commemorating a real Jewish heroine, someone who, a lady who was willing to be parachuted into war-torn Europe at the time, in order to try to save Jewish lives, in order to try and encourage the Jews who were under threat to rise up and to try to do whatever they can to protect themselves. Unfortunately, her mission was not successful, but the bravery that she showed in being willing to try it out is something that's worthy of commemoration.
Absolutely. And before I let you go, let's just talk about Israel and the Olympics.
Yes. Yeah, so Israel is going to be sending its largest ever Olympic delegation to the Tokyo Olympics, which are due to start within the next few days. Lots and lots of controversy around how exactly the games will be conducted, but it seems as if though it's all going ahead as planned. More than 80 members of the Israeli Olympic delegation met with outgoing President Ruvi Rivlin. Unfortunately, he didn't have time to do it when he was in the process of handing over the reins to President Herzog. And so that was postponed a little bit, but ultimately he had the time and the chance to meet with the Israeli delegation. There is a hope of quite a few Israeli medals this time around. And so without wanting to jinx the fortunes of the Israeli delegation, it's just interesting that the first time the Israeli athletes participated in an Olympic Games at all was in 1952 at the Helsinki Olympics. 25 Israeli athletes attended that particular Games. And today we're sending just shy of 90 athletes to participate. Some new sports that are being participated in include archery, which Israeli athletes have never participated in before. And of course, the usual ones that we've seen Israelis be quite successful at, judo, windsurfing, also rhythmic gymnastics. There's some hopes for some medals there. So we're going to certainly be keeping an eye out over the next few days on the Israeli delegation, not only at the Olympic Games, but indeed, of course, a couple of weeks later at the Paralympic Games, where Israeli athletes have also excelled in prior years. Quite exciting, and it's going to be interesting to see what format the Olympic Games takes place this year, already a year delayed, and certainly not quite the same as previous Olympic Games.
Yeah, look, I don't want to brag or anything, Anthony, but South Africa was the first, the two players from South Africa being the first to be tested for COVID-19 in Tokyo. So, you know, we are.
They weren't the last, though.
Certainly they were not the last, and nor will they be. But at least we know that South Africa has already got some firsts in the bag. It is about to go 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45 for the Israel Report.